Evening. Welcome to the Welcome to the Thursday, November 9th, 2017 City of Columbia, Missouri Planning and Zoning Commission regular meeting. May we have a roll call, please?
Yes, I am here. Ms. Lowe.
Here.
Mr. Harder.
Here.
Mr. McMahon.
Present.
Mr. Stanton.
Here.
Mr. Strodman.
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing.
Here.
Ms. Russell. Mr. Tuohy.
Here.
We have eight. We have a quorum.
Thank you, Mrs. Secretary. Approval of agenda. Mr. Zinner, is there any changes to our agenda?
No, there are not, sir.
Thank you. A thumbs up on approval of agenda. Emma's thumbs up. Thank you. Approval of minutes. Attachment from October 19th, 2017. Minutes from our last regular meeting. Are there any corrections or changes needed to those minutes? I see none. Do you want to do a roll call, please?
I vote yes to approve the minutes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
8-0, motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Secretary. Moving on to our first subdivision item of the evening, case 17-119. At this time, I would ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to case 17-119, please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. I see none. A request by Brush and Associates on behalf of Eliza and Eliza LLC for approval of a 31-lot preliminary plat on R1, which is the one-family dwelling district zone land to be known as Mill Creek Meadows Subdivision Plat 1, and a design adjustment from 29-5.1, parentheses B.2.3, which requires areas identified as sensitive land not to be included on lots intended for development. The 15.57-acre subject site is generally located on the east side of Old Mill Creek Road, approximately 3,000 feet south of Nifong Boulevard, and addressed at 4700 South Old Mill Creek Road. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you stated, this is a request for a preliminary plat tonight for approximately 16 acres of property located on the south side of town off of Old Mill Creek Road. There request does include a design adjustment to the portion that you had described previously, which includes the sensitive land area section of the UDC. I'll just give you some context here. The subject site's highlighted there in the middle of the screen with Old Mill Creek Road running along the west side of it. As you can see, it goes north, connecting there to Vauder School or Nifong, I think, in that location. You can see kind of the general development pattern through there. We have some typical suburban subdivisions and several larger lot, more county-type subdivisions in the area. To the east of that is the general location of the Sinclair Farms, which is generally undeveloped at this time. This is the overall layout for the preliminary plat. It does include approximately 29 buildable single-family lots with two common lots. You can see along generally the southern portion of the property is the location of the majority of the sensitive area, as we have learned, is includes areas within the stream buffer area, also includes area within the floodplain and any steep slopes. It also includes the majority of their tree preservation area as well. So it is all accommodated currently on common lots, except for a small portion, which we'll talk about here in 1 second. The roadway through the site does connect Old Mill Creek on the west. As you can see, it's connected all the way through the property to the east property line, where it abuts undeveloped property, which would provide a future connection, at which point the property to the east does develop. Then a connection could be made, although it would possibly require some sort of bridge structure at that point. It does have a small cul-de-sac, which does meet cul-de-sac links within the UDC. And given the standards for that cul-de-sac for this portion, just as a note, sidewalks are not required along there, but sidewalks are required along all other existing right-of-way, which include along Old Mill Creek. And the portion that includes the area that we'll be talking about for the design adjustment tonight is highlighted here in the upper right corner. As you can see, lot 15, which is directly west of these two areas, is located, or the proposed location anyway, is really at the far eastern edge of the developable area. Given kind of the diagonal context of the sensitive area and the east-west orientation of the roadway, you have this kind of intersection where there is developable land to the north of it, but then it kind of squeezes down when you get to the roadway and does not provide access to the area kind of to the northern part of that. The applicant is requesting basically the area in red, which is approximately 300 square feet, be allowed to be included in lot 15 to give them the minimum lot width in that in the regard as what would be the minimum per UDC standards. In exchange, the area in the green would generally, which is right now outside of the floodplain, would be included in the common lot to kind of as an exchange of property to kind of make up the difference, although that portion is not in the floodplain. Some of the factors they included is the location of this small part of floodplain area. If you'll notice, it is basically directly adjacent to a roadway, and as that roadway continues east, that is when the grade does start to change significantly as it goes down into basically into Mill Creek. If there is an extension in the future to the east, it is likely that a bridge would be required there. The grades are likely again to change probably significantly in this small area that they're talking about. So. After evaluating the request and given the small area that they're requesting, kind of the potential or the high potential that the grade may not be what it is currently right now in the floodplain, we did not object to granting the design adjustment in this situation given the really limited scope of the request. We didn't feel like it would have a significant impact on the requirements within the UDC. It would not specifically be contrary to the Columbia Imagine standards. And again, wouldn't be detrimental to any surrounding neighbors or properties. So in this instance, we, again, don't object to granting that design adjustment. This is kind of a better view of the floodplain area. As you can see, this is the land analysis map that was submitted. As we have talked about in previous meetings, this area here in the crosshatch would be the flood fringe. That is the area that's within the floodplain but outside of the floodway. So it's still floodplain. And generally, this doesn't show the lot layout, but the location of that would be in this vicinity here. You see the stream buffer here. And also within that stream buffer area, the applicant has granted a trail easement for future extension of a park trail, at which time the property is actually platted. In addition, the applicant is granting the standard right-of-way requirements along Old Mill Creek, which is identified as a major collector. The street that is going through that, Terzop, I believe is how you pronounce it, is identified as a neighborhood collector in this situation. And we did discuss sensitive areas there and the design adjustment. So with that being said, just reiterate that we are recommending approval of the preliminary plat along with the requested design adjustment. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Commissioners, any questions for staff? Yes, ma'am.
Just to clarify, this street here, is it going in the future east to connect to Sinclair or north to connect to Nifong, or either?
The roadway here reflected on the preliminary plat?
Mm-hmm.
The possible extension of that would continue to the east, and if I can go back here, you'll see basically in this location, and I wish I had the street names on there, but I believe this is Southampton here, which is identified as a neighborhood collector. Okay. It's identified as the logical connecting point for an extension of a street through the subdivision here on the subject property. So that intersection would likely take place here in Sinclair.
Okay. Thank you.
Any additional questions? Ms. Lowe.
Well, to follow up on that question, subdivision standards in 29-5.1
under avoidance of sensitive lands, also identify street crossings of sensitive land areas are minimized to the maximum extent practicable. So we've talked about this lot being in the floodplain, but I too am curious about why this road is extending into the floodplain and floodway as shown in the preliminary plan.
And that is something that we did discuss internally, and it is a conscious decision to show the extension of that street through that area. Unfortunately, to cross any streams, you will be affecting floodplain areas. And so we have to evaluate whether or not this location makes sense in the context of connectivity overall for the area.
Right. So this does not show up on CATSO.
That's correct. It is not on CATSO. It has been discussed at CATSO. Previously as a somewhere that might be added in the future. So the decision
the
at this time...
The CATSO crossing right now, east to west, goes below the floodplain, so it avoids the floodplain area. So
the CATSO crossing
a little bit conflicted
right now,
about approving something that goes through the floodway when CATSO appears to have avoided doing that.
I believe CATSO is shows, though, the further extension of Old Mill Creek straight south as well. And so at some point in that location, a stream crossing would be needed to fulfill the goals of having that connection going south as well. It is a difficult intersection, and the roadway curves the way it does for a reason, and because Mill Creek does come through there diagonally. So I think with the extension of Old Mill Creek going south, connecting possibly with a extension that would curve along to the east, and I don't have the full map here, but back towards Sinclair, the next step then would be to look at the locations of connectivity along that stretch where you have over a mile or two, I think, between any type of east-west connectivity if you went from Vauder School down to where Old Mill Creek extended would curve back to Sinclair. And if you look at basically the street design standards, you're looking at some sort of collector connection every, I believe it's, is it mile or perhaps half mile?
CATSO shows it going over at Crab Apple, extending across. And where Old Mill Creek Road, it's much narrower where that comes across than where this road appears to be running to the east.
This wouldn't be in substitute of Crab Apple. This would be in addition to Crab Apple.
I understand that.
So that is something we're aware of that is not on CATSO. We did consult with some of our representatives on CATSO, and they did give us the information that this has been discussed. So the preliminary plat does not require the road to be built. At this point, they would construct the roadway for the time being to a temporary turnaround on the east side of the property. The decision to make a crossing would most likely require city financing at some point, and so a decision would have to be made with the city's involvement, whether or not to do the crossing at that point in time and whether or not that connection was warranted. Given the potential future development of the Sinclair Farm to the east, I think a connection is going to be part of that conversation. I don't know if that's going to be the final decision, but at this stage, it does, in our regard, does make sense to include it so that it at least is part of that conversation when we get to that point. If it's not, and the terminus is shown, then the final plat really won't be able to accommodate a connection at all in the future.
The turnaround appears to be shown in the floodway.
That is true.
And I'm curious because this seems to contradict the standard I cited earlier. Mm-hmm. To move on to another point, it says if any lot intended for development includes designated sensitive areas, the subdivision shall restrict construction of permanent structures to a designated building area, which it does not include, and the sensitive area shall be permanently protected by designation within a preservation easement. In the application we saw, the letter we saw, it does not appear to do that, nor are we getting a designated footprint. Can you just comment on why those
that might have been something that was overlooked in this context? I think we could have the building envelope shown on the preliminary plat. I would say this was one of the first preliminaries that we did review when it came in with the new UDC. It was delayed for portions of time as we kind of worked through the sensitive land area requirements, and they have been kind of evolving as we're going. So that might have been something that was overlooked at the point when we did look at this small bit of sensitive area. So it's something we could go back and very well request that the applicant put the building envelope on the lot. I don't think that would be too much to ask at that point. And then we could have a preservation.
Well, actually, the letter says that the sensitive area will no longer be in the floodplain because it's going to be modified by the easement and driveway construction. So it appears that we're not protecting the sensitive area at all.
And that's, again, in the context of having the road extension. So there is competing ideals there. There's the whether or not to extend the roadway and perhaps provide the ability to make that connection in the future with also addressing the need to preserve the sensitive areas. And
just finally, these issues all seem to be brought up by the addition of that lot. If that lot wasn't there, the road wouldn't be extending into the floodplain. We wouldn't be having a lot platted in the floodplain area, correct?
That is correct. If you eliminated the lot, then there would be no developable lots that included floodplain. The roadway would still, at least in the instance where we're recommending that the road be shown as connecting to the property to the east, which is undeveloped at this time, that roadway would still be reflected on the plans. Whether or not the temporary turnaround is still in the same location could be looked at when we have final design plans. I don't know if that's the exact location it would be at that point, but roadway plans are not required to be submitted or approved with a preliminary plat.
So the green piece is what is being outside of the sensitive, and the red is mm-hmm. There is no reason to define a building. It's outside of the sensitive.
Yeah, and Mr. Zinner brings a good point as far as the building envelope goes, because the red area that is a sensitive area is actually located completely within easement and would be completely within the front yard setback. So essentially, the front yard setback is the building envelope in this case.
I understand. I'm simply going through our ordinance and identifying what is tripped when a lot is platted with sensitive areas and asking why these steps don't appear to have been followed. If there is a justification for that, I would appreciate that. Maybe that could be identified.
Well, I'll go back to your
first. Setting precedent.
I'll go back to your first thing. First, as far as the extension of streets being minimized, when you cross the stream, there's no possibility to minimize or eliminate the need to encroach within that sensitive area. So, in this case, staff did make the decision that we're going to require that them show the connection going east. So, we cannot eliminate the impact when we're requiring them to meet the connectivity requirement.
Why is the city requiring the connection to the east if it's not on the CANSO plan?
Because part of the overall transportation network planning policies and philosophy that we have is that we have roadway connections of major collector streets every 1/2 mile in order to disperse traffic throughout the road network. At this point, this road location, due to the development to the north of it, is actually exceeding that by almost double. And then the next major connection that would be provided is further to the south on the backside of Mill Creek Manor, which would basically be traversing as well the Sinclair Farms property further down Sinclair Road. If this connection were not provided, we would be probably 2.5 to 3 miles between having a east-west connection from Vauder Nifong down to the old Mill Creek connection that is proposed, which I don't believe is the extension of Crabapple. Crabapple, I believe, has an offset before it comes into Mill Creek Manor. So we have to look at things from the perspective of future development. Part of what our role is not all maps that we have created or all plans show every road network and connection that's necessary. When opportunities present themselves, such as this development proposal, where we have our traffic engineering and our CATSO partners participating in the review, this connection points itself out as being a connection that we believe is important. We realize it contradicts the code, but the connection for the purposes of future connectivity to undeveloped property of significant acreage to the east is necessary. And without this connection, we further thwart the ability to be able to create the uniformity that we have existing in our other areas throughout the community of having roughly connections every one-half mile. So that's where that conflict is created. It's not a CATSO improvement at this point. It likely would be reevaluated at a point the CATSO believes it's necessary when we have more development data for the Sinclair Farms property and add the east-west roadway connections. At this point, we have very little information about how Sinclair Farms may develop. There has been very little effort to jointly plan the development of that property between the University of Missouri and the city. So we have to provide every opportunity we can to ensure that the connections that we know we will need based on our road network are available. Otherwise, we create real problems for ourselves in the future. We create bottlenecks and additional traffic problems on the network that's not sufficient to support what may happen as the infill in this particular area occurs. The justification, I believe, Ms. Lowe, that you're looking for may not be in the staff report, but I can guarantee you, as part of the review of this project, we looked at all of the scenarios and all of the reasons for why this 300 square feet was not to be considered as a separate defined parcel. As Mr. Smith just pointed out, it is fully encumbered by utility easements as well as the front setback. There is a practical aspect here. Why create an easement in an area when, in fact, it's covered by a de facto easement that's not buildable? It's not something that we are trying to avoid. It's we are looking at things from the practical applications perspective of our other code requirements. If that's something that the commission desires to have pointed out in the staff reports to justify why we are making decisions that seem administrative, we will more than happily try to put that into your reports in the future. So I think as we pointed out when we dealt with our last and our first request with sensitive feature waiver, the flood plain is a developable portion of property. It has historically been developable within the city of Columbia. There are extents to which development of the floodplain may be not wise, and in other instances, the development of the floodplain may not be seen as much of an obstacle. However, the floodplain can be raised, and it can be removed. And in this particular instance, if this roadway is extended or any grading or any other type of utility work is made, it's likely that this floodplain area would be removed. And that could happen before this plat's approved, or it can happen afterward. So if the applicant wants to go ahead and go through the process of elevating this, which he is entitled to do, he could do it now and come back in with this exact same plat, and we wouldn't be having this discussion. At least the applicant has proposed the request at this point. I believe we as a staff have identified how it's being handled and addressed, and how the applicant is actually giving land to offset the impact that he is creating that's outside of the sensitive features that he did not have to otherwise give. So based on those conditions, that is why our staff supports the request that's at hand. We realize that we may take exception to that, but that's our justification. We believe it's a practical and a reasonable swap, and it doesn't diminish the impact or the ability of the code to be able to be functional.
And I might just add, just from a regulatory standpoint, it is in the code that we should require the extension of streets to unimproved lands that are adjacent to a property. But part of the ways we can look at that is if it does disturb sensitive areas. And so that could be a justification why we don't make that extension, but it shouldn't be the sole reason we don't make the extension. If that extension is warranted for future connectivity, then I think we will still recommend that. And two, I'll just echo something Mr. Zinner. It's, well, he may not have touched on it, but part of the reason this was delayed, we did go through several iterations of this. And again, this was one of the first ones we reviewed. And so there was significant changes. And I think if the commissioners had seen the first drafts, they would, I think, see how much it did change along those lines as far as reducing the lots that are there now to get them out of the sensitive areas. And so we did come down to this final little area that wasn't removed, and they did ask for that design adjustment, but they did make significant changes to the original design, which was required by the code, and we did work with them through that process. So we looked at this as kind of a small area that, again, The future of it is a little bit up in the air, given the location next to that roadway and with the bridge extension. And so that is where we came to our decision to go ahead and recommend approval. And it may not be the exact area where the roadway might go. Again, with the turnaround, there could be some changes there when we have design plans in the future. So some of it is unknown, and we'll possibly have another look at this when it comes in for final platting as well.
Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A comment and maybe a request, maybe two requests. This harkens back to the school we approved on the other side of the Sinclair property. And we noted at that time, and we approved the school, while that in its footprint met all the requirements, it had an impact in the area much greater than just that. It met the requirements when we passed it. And I believe Commissioner Lowe and I and others indicated that we need to think about the area impact. Coming forward to today, we have a situation whereby, and I believe the 300 feet is symbolic. The 300 feet in and of itself could probably be managed. We have an area of environmental sensitivity that has created, with the new code, has created a conflict. Whereby I understand Mr. Zenner's transportation points exactly. I do, but at the same time, we're running into a water issue. And we've spent the last 5 years dealing with stormwater and sewer and trying to mitigate those issues. And while I agree with you that it's in your ministerial power to do that, I think we might need to plan a little more carefully moving forward. That's the end of my comment for now. Thank you.
Ms. Rushing.
If this were not being looked at as part of a collector street, how long could that street be?
How long could the street be?
If it's ends in a cul-de-sac.
If it ended in the cul-de-sac. 300 feet or a maximum of 700 feet or 750 feet, I think, if it met certain conditions.
So they would lose a number of lots?
Possibly, yes.
Yeah.
I'd have to do the measurement, but they might be able to
accommodate it. It shows the lots as being roughly 70 feet wide. So 10, 11 lots in. It looks like they would lose a few lots.
If they pulled it back and they could redesign the lots so they were more around the cul-de-sac, I think they might get pretty close.
Any additional questions, commissioners? As in past practices, this is not a public hearing, but if there's anybody in the audience that would like to come forward and give us any relevant information about this case, we would welcome that at this time. Just give us your name and address, please.
My name is Dan Brush with Brush & Associates, 506 Nickel Street. I'm the engineer on the project. Basically, sounds like we pretty well hashed out everything I was going to talk about, except for the sensitive area. In looking at the grades and so forth, if the road is to be extended, our original design we started out with was a cul-de-sac coming back and staying out of that area. But through the iterations we've done, we've ended up where we are today. I anticipate that the grade on that road is going to have to come up about 5 feet. Basically, that little 300 square foot or whatever area is going to end up with fill material on it just to go ahead and grade out the slopes anyway for the road. It won't be in a floodplain at that point in time. And that is the reason for our request, is that it basically will not function as a sensitive area, which is why we offered to go ahead and replace it with other area that would function in that way. Other than that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have of me.
Commissioners, any questions of this speaker? Yes, ma'am.
What size residences do you see being built on these lots?
Probably anywhere from 18 to 2,500 square foot, somewhere in there. be a guess. I have not talked to the owner about what he is actually looking to market it at.
And is it going to be clear to future purchasers that this is a proposed connector and not just a dead-end street?
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Stanton?
What was your main reason from walking away from the cul-de-sac design? City? Okay.
Mr. McMahon?
Just a comment. Mr. Brush, I just want to let you know that I appreciate your swap. I think it's more than even, and I understand fitting things in. We have an ordinance conflict that I don't think it's new. We knew we'd run into these that we haven't fully resolved yet. So you're doing your deal. I think it's a fair enough swap, just to let you know.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you, Mr. Brush.
Thank you.
Any additional speakers that have come forward? I see none. Commissioners, questions, comments, additional information needed? A motion? Mr. Stanton.
As it relates to case 17-199, Bill Creek Meadows subdivision plat 1, preliminary plat design adjustments, I move to approve the preliminary plat. And requested design adjustments.
I'll second that.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton, for that motion to approve and seconded by Mr. Toohey. Do we have any discussion needed on that motion? Ms. Lowe.
I would just like to comment that we have had a similar question come up in a previous case, and I'm struggling with some real consistency questions here, and my vote's going to reflect that.
And I have the same problem with a very similar proposal, but it was put before us in a different form.
Any additional questions or discussion needed on that motion? I see none. Ms. Burns, when you're ready.
Yes. My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
No.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
No.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
No.
Mr. Toohey?
Yes.
5-3, motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Recommendation for approval will be forwarded to City Council for their consideration.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Yes, Mr. Zinner.
In accordance to the Unified Development Code procedures, any preliminary plat or final plat that has a associated design modification with it will be processed as an ordinance, not a resolution, meaning it is a two-reading process. So this item will cycle on to the second meeting in December for City Council. It will have two readings prior to being approved, and as not being approved by 75% of the Planning and Zoning Commission, it will be under old business as well.
Thank you for bringing that to our attention, Mr. Zinner. Moving on to our first public hearing and subdivision matter of the evening. At this time, I would ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to case 17-76. Please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. I see none. Case 17-76, a request by Crockett Engineering on behalf of the Brooks at Columbia LLC to annex 161.84 acres of Boone County AR, which is the county's agricultural residential district zone land into the City of Columbia and apply R1, which is the city's one-family dwelling district, as permanent zoning. The subject site is located on the north side of State Route WW, approximately 900 feet west of South Rolling Hills Road. This item has been previously tabled at the August 24th, September 21st, and October 19th Planning Commission meetings. May we have a staff report, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. All right. So this is kind of a two-part request, and I will present the permanent zoning request first with the associated preliminary plat after this. In the conclusion of conducting the public hearing for the zoning, if the commission would like, I can continue on with the review of the preliminary plat at that time too. And of course, if you'd like to have your discussion prior to the preliminary plat, just let me know. I'm happy to do whichever you'd like. So, as you stated, this is a nearly 162-acre piece of property that is requesting permanent zoning from the Planning and Zoning Commission tonight, pending the annexation of the property, which would be heard at a council meeting in the future. We'll kind of do some quick overview of the site to give you some context of the area we're talking about. As you can see, this is kind of the east portion of town along Highway WW. The site there is basically east of Highway 63, which you can see on the far west side of the screen, south of I-70 to the north. Rolling Hills is a roadway that goes up north and south, east of the property. The large development to the east side, that's the old Hawthorne development. The Vineyards development's to the south. This piece is roughly associated with another development here, and I'll show you in a second the site to the northeast, which is also referred to as the Brooks Phase 1. This is a little tighter view of that. As you can see, it's a slightly newer aerial, so we do see some of the site work that's being done, and this is a little bit dated as well, so there's quite a bit of construction on that location to the northeast as well. excuse me. But as you can see, the development here does have a connection to Rolling Hills. We'll touch base a little bit on the connectivity between those two properties here in the future. And a couple of the connection points to this site as well. As you can see, the entrances will be to basically across from two existing roadways. So to give you a little idea of on those locations, we have a road here and a road here, which the roadways within development will more or less mirror on the north side. again, it's just some on-the-ground photos. On the top left, we're starting kind of on the west side of the property moving east. This is near the intersection of El Chaparral, looking east towards the property. You can see how there's a hill in the background there. The next two photos are from that location, looking back west again. And then back east here, and in the far background, you can see the traffic light that is not currently turned on at the intersection of Elk Park and Highway WW. And now we're there. So here we're at this intersection of Elk Park Drive. This is looking north. We're potentially, again, kind of jumping ahead, but where a connection would be made to the development in question tonight. So this is within or to the south of that, looking north into where the entrance would be going into that site. This is a little bit further west from the light, as you can see, looking back east. And then this is, again, looking west. So that kind of takes us to the far eastern side of the property. Thank you for humoring me there to give a broad overview of the site. This is a general overview of the surrounding zoning on the property and adjacent to the property. It is contiguous to the city. Generally, along its entire northern border, this purplish color here is a planned district zoning. This is all within the city. This is the Brooks Phase 1 or Plat 1 development here. You can kind of see the layout for that site. To the east, again, is Old Hawthorne. To the south is a couple pieces of property that is currently within the city that it would be considered contiguous to as well. This purple here, again, PD-zoned area, and some R1-zoned area here within the Vineyards subdivision. And the property itself is zoned AR, which is kind of an agricultural residential zoning in the county. It's a half-acre minimum lot size, and that is similar to the zoning to the east and west of the site, which is currently still in the county as well. Excuse me. As I kind of stated, the current zoning for that is a half-acre minimum. Columbia Imagine identifies this area as being within a neighborhood district, which the requested R1 zoning is consistent with that. That's similar to the designation within the East Area Plan as well. The R1 would be allowed development that is consistent generally with the surrounding properties to the north, which is currently vacant right now. The PD entitles that development to residential, which would be similar in density to what you would expect to see here and possibly within the Brooks development, again, to the northeast. The exception there would be potentially the Cedar Grove development to the east, which is your kind of typical county larger lot development right now, which is generally to be considered developed. To the west, there is some undeveloped pieces of property. You have the county fire station and a church, but generally more undeveloped property that is still in the county currently. And for just for as a note, this property is within the urban service area, well within it, not close to any boundaries. The utilities do exist to serve the site. There are no issues so far that have been identified with it. The sewer is available for serving the site, along with other non-city utilities. A couple of things while in the evaluation of this site, staff did want to identify that fell within the East Area Plan recommendations and goals. I would say that in general, the R1 zoning is generally consistent with the residential designation that's found within the two comprehensive plans. There are some more specific goals, though, that kind of provide some context, again, for some areas that maybe the plan isn't meeting 100%, and I'll go through those real quick. One of the recommendations or goals from the East Area Plan for development was providing varied housing types, generally different types of housing dwelling units to provide housing for different types of economic backgrounds and so forth. These things, as you can see within this site, the R1 designation, and again, when we look at the preliminary plat, is generally a fairly consistent style of development. It's single-family detached with similar lot sizes. Most likely won't provide for a large variety of housing types. There are some strategies that could be implemented here that could provide some of those additional housing types. One of those could be a planned district designation. That specific type of zoning is mentioned within the East Area Plan as a tool for providing or for meeting some of the goals within the East Area Plan. But with the new zoning designations, there are other tools within the UDC that could be implemented on here to provide a little bit more variety. We could look at some additional density within, especially within the intersection or near the intersection of El Chaparral or even Rosetta Avenue, where that would connect to this property on the southwest corner of the property. Some of the zoning designations that we have now for R2 or multifamily could enhance the variety of the types of housing units that are provided on the site. The R2 especially has a additional small lot, single-family detached designation that can be granted to provide some smaller, more dense, single-family detached housing units. So there's ways to, I think, address some of the housing types issues, but I would point out, too, that with the intersection to the west with El Chaparral being a likely location for a major collector intersection and the site being generally undeveloped, there are other opportunities there as well for additional densities with housing to be incorporated within this area. So I wouldn't say that this location here rises to the level of needing to have any specific additional densities. We do think the R1 still falls within the general recommendations for residential use here. Another goal within the East Area Plan was to integrate parks and green space into residential developments. This site, again, is 160 acres, and it does have some larger areas of contiguous forested and timber areas within the northeast portion of the site and along the lake. And the applicant is preserving quite a bit of that area. They are required by code to preserve 25% of the climax forest area. And many times within the process of development, larger areas beyond just the minimum are preserved. So it's hard to tell at this point in time exactly what will be preserved on the site as far as green space and some of the areas for tree cover. And I'm kind of jumping ahead to the existing tree cover one too, but I'll kind of come back to that. As far as the park and the green space go, there could be opportunities here. And I'll touch on those a little bit more when we get the preliminary plat because that comes back a little bit to the design of the site. So, again, I'll kind of go through some of these, but as far as providing some context, we can or I'll highlight some of those areas in the future. But I would say that as far as green space, kind of active space within the sites, they do have a lake there, or a lake within the development. They'll be providing connections through there through easements on the east side of the property. Again, tree preservation areas, and they do have a lot there designated for amenities for use on the subdivision. So they are providing some of those areas that you would hope to see would meet those the same objectives of having parks and green space for active areas for residents within a development. And given the size of this space of 162 acres, it seems that some of those areas would be very beneficial for residents in the future. I would point out, too, and I'll show this again on the preliminary plat, the location of a potential park district site that is a requirement for development to the north. So that does play a little bit into, I think, the amenities provided for this development as well. And, excuse me, the existing tree cover, again, I kind of touched on that. They will be required to preserve 25% of the climax forested areas. There is additional opportunities to preserve some of the tree cover as it is currently. The East Area Plan has not designated a specific goal other than to preserve the existing tree cover. So the minimum 25% was the regulatory process that the city implemented to kind of identify a minimum amount for preservation. And that may meet that requirement in itself. So after basically discussing all those, I would say that while there are a lot of goals within the East Area Plan and within Columbia Imagine, and some of those we identified here, which may not be met maybe to their fullest, I would point out that very few developments are probably going to be 100% in line with every single recommendation within the Columbia Imagine, the East Area Plan. So we didn't see anything that necessarily would cause us to recommend a different zoning district. So at this point, we are recommending approval of the R1 permanent zoning for this site. I'll be happy to answer questions on the zoning portion of this, and then I will have a presentation on the preliminary plat as well.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Commissioners, is there any discussion needed on this portion? I see none. We want to open it up to the public, or we just want to continue on?
I think we conduct a public hearing, and then we can continue on at that point.
Go ahead and open it to the public hearing portion. So anyone that's in the public that would like to come forward, we would ask for your name and address.
Chairman, members of the commission, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. I would respectfully ask that we could just defer my presentation at the time of the preliminary plat that covers both of them at one time, if that suits the commission.
Commissioners, okay with that? Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Any additional speakers from the audience that to come forward? We'll close that portion of the public hearing and move, commissioners, move forward into the, Mr. Zinner.
I'm in order to ensure that the minutes capture the discussions discreetly between the two cases, while I understand what Mr. Crockett's point is to present you one unified package, because that's most likely how they have presented their, how they have prepared their presentation, it does lend itself a little bit of a challenge for our folks with Tiger and then our dismantling of the minutes to have these as a presentation, public input, no vote, and then a vote at the very end. It would be much more appropriate and I believe efficient from the minutes perspective if in fact we were to divide. Close this zoning case out and then potentially move forward to the subdivision action.
Sounds good. Commissioners, any questions for any discussion needed or questions, information, or a motion? Mr. McMahon.
Just a question. Mr. Crockett, did you want to present on this then if it's going to be two separate actions?
If it's two actions, I'd be happy to present some limited information that I have regarding the annex, or excuse me, the zoning.
Just give us your name and address again, and we'll start over.
Sure. Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering, 1000 West Nifong. Bear with me if you don't mind. Let me skip ahead here a little bit. Again, Tim Crockett, Crockett Engineering. With me tonight is Caleb Colbert, attorney on the project. I'm working mainly on the development agreement. Well, Mr. Smith will speak about in a little bit, as well as Quinn Belmer, who is the applicant for this project. Again, we can talk. I'm going to briefly scan forward here just a little bit with regard to the annexation zoning of the property. the red line here shows urban service area. I think Mr. Smith briefly discussed that a little bit, being inside the urban service area. And I think that we wanted to graphically show that. A lot of times that's a concern or a question about where it is in relation to the urban service area. And you can see by this depiction here that we're relatively far away from the actual line itself. Another item I'd like to depict on this sketch is what you can see in green is what's in county. The beige color is what's annexed into the city of Columbia. So really the location that we're talking about, I don't want to say it's an island of county inside the city, but really the city limits has expanded on all sides of this particular piece of property. So, we believe that, annexation, of course, in zoning is appropriate for this location. Not to steal a slide from the city, but I'll steal one of Mr. Smith's slides here. I think that this is a good slide. It really shows the varied types of housing stock in the area, whether it's PUD, R1, AR, there's some CGP, there's some RM. It's just a wide range of zoning types in this area. And so we believe that that the R1 would be an appropriate addition for this location. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the commission may have.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Commissioners, is there any questions for the speaker? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Crockett.
Thank you.
Commissioners, are there any additional discussion needed? Questions? Motion?
Chairman, just before you take a motion, you may want to ask and reopen the floor for any additional public comment as Mr. Crockett has made a presentation.
I understand. Thank you for the clarification. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to come forward at this time and give us any information that's relevant to case 17-76? We would welcome you at this point. I see none. Commissioners, any discussion? Mr. Stanton, did you still have your hand up?
Yes, I did.
Mr. Stanton.
As it relates to case 17-76, Brooks at Columbia LLC annexation, annex permanent zoning, I move to approve the request to the R1 permanent zoning pending annexation.
Thank you, Mr. Stanton. Do we have a second?
Second.
Mr. McMahon, thank you for the second. Commissioners, we have a second and a motion. We've had a motion made and second. Is there any discussion needed on that motion? I see none. Mrs. Burns, when you're ready for a roll call.
Yes. My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strodeman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Mr. Tuohy?
Yes.
8-0, motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Our recommendation for approval before the City Council for their consideration. At this time, I would ask any commissioner who has had any ex parte communications prior to this meeting related to this case 17-77, please disclose that now so all commissioners have the same information to consider on behalf of this case in front of us. Thank you. A request by Crockett Engineering Consultants on behalf of Brooks Development LLC for approval of a 398-lot preliminary plat on R1, which is the city's one-family dwelling district zoned land, to be known as the Brooks Preliminary Plat Number 2, pending annexation and permanent zoning. The 161.84-acre subject site is generally located on the north side of State Route WW, approximately 900 feet west of South Rolling Hills Road. May we have a staff report, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So what we're discussing with this request is the associated preliminary plat over the same area that we just discussed as far as the zoning pending annexation request was part of. So approximately 162 acres, again, same location. This is for a preliminary plat. And it's referred to as number 2. Not necessarily a revision, but it is associated with the development to the northeast, the Brooks preliminary plat, or plat 1. Again, the site, I don't think we need to rehash again the location, but generally, again, the site here for reference if anyone needs to see that. One thing I will touch on with this one is the major roadways located on this site. As you can see, this is a excerpt from the major roadway plan. The dashed black line is the site in question, and the two greenish lines with dashes through them reflect the original alignment of two major collectors that were shown on the site or adjacent to the site. Early on in the process with the design that was presented by the applicant, they were instructed to request a revision through CATSO to approve the alignment that is reflected within their preliminary plat. They did go to council and were approved as far as the alignment shown on their plat. Generally, the original alignment had a east-west here collector coming from Rolling Hills connecting with El Chaparral. That's been substituted now with a collector that connects down to this intersection. On the north-south will be collector here would be incorporated along the west portion. There wouldn't be a specific intersection between the two collectors, but there is connectivity between them within the subdivision. This is it's a fairly large piece. It's 162 acres. It is 390 developable lots, so lots that are eligible for single-family homes. Originally, there were 8 common lots, but given the design of it with additional common lots, there's actually now 35 common lots. So technically, it's about 425 lots. But the amount of developable lots has not changed. It's 390, basically R1 lots, if that zoning is approved on the site. As you can see, the two connections here, this is the Hoy Lake roadway here, and then another connection, which would be to Highway WW. That would connect to the site along the south property line. I'm going to go through a couple things here as far as the design of the site goes and some of the earlier recommendations that we mentioned with the zoning as far as some, not necessarily recommendations, but just as a clarification, I think, on some of the open space and green space that we had discussed, which are more a little more aptly addressed, I think, with the preliminary plat. Real quick, again, the major collector running through this site, which would connect the portion back towards Rolling Hills, is Hoy Lake. That's the red line here. Basically, it's going to be a through street that will connect again. And it's really hard to tell on this, but to the northeast, and I'll jump back here in a second, this road will connect to Hoy Lake, thereby basically granting, and we'll stay right here, connecting to the northeast of the property here to this roadway, within the first phase of the Brooks, thereby providing a connectivity through from Rolling Hills to WW, thereby collecting the vehicular traffic within those developments. The red arrows along the side show basically connections to adjacent undeveloped properties with plentiful connections allowing the development and connection to the development in the future. The west here, again, this is the El Chaparral. This will be the potentially newly aligned major collector that will be the north-south collector. They're providing a connection stub to the west that would provide access to that roadway in the future as well, providing, again, another connection to a collector for residents within the development. And this location is the second access point on WW. The green shaded areas here represent generally, these are not exact lines, but they generally represent areas that are currently wooded right now. I'm not going to necessarily say they're all specifically climax areas, but they generally fall within, probably within that category. The bulk of the preservation is going to be in the northeast area here with this larger common lot. It's quite possible that they'll have larger than a 25% minimum within that area as far as preservation goes, but again, at this time, they're required 25% per code. Some of these areas might be able to be areas where additional preservation might be obtained with certain preservation techniques within the backyards or along these areas. But again, that would be one way to get closer to meeting some of those objectives with an East Area Plan. But again, with the large portion of preservation on the northeast of this portion of the property, it's not something that raises the level of being a requirement. They are meeting the minimum requirements at this time. As far as open space, green space, active areas, the location of the one lot that's designated as kind of a neighborhood amenity lot is in this location. Would point out, though, as far as a property and a development of this size, the future residents, as far as providing park and open space. Once again, the site to the north, this development here, which was annexed previously and was annexed with this portion of the property on the east side as well, along with basically other property along Rolling Hills. There was a requirement with the annexation of that property that 10 acres of parkland be set aside at the time when it basically develops in the future. I know the applicant has talked to the Park District about some locations for that, not necessarily as a representative of the current owner, but I think he's basically has connections with the owners of this property as well through them, and possibly located in an area that might suit the park's needs. That is not final. It's really a preliminary discussion, which I think is appropriate at this stage to make sure that there is some sort of plan moving forward for a regional park, given the kind of the volume of new residents we may have in this area. And basically, it would be located somewhere along the creek here to the north of the property. So once this property develops, most likely, again, as a similar residential development, they would be expected there'd be some connectivity to a trail in the future that the city would have extended as part of a trails network through the Parks District, and thereby providing some of that open space, that needed open space for residents of this development in the future. With that being said, I think given the scale of development, there could always be some additional open spaces granted for the site that could provide that kind of amenity or that unique space for a subdivision, especially one of this size. We had discussed with the applicant, regarding providing some additional open space and some connections to the open space. We did find, or they were able to provide basically some connections, especially through this area here with this loop street, basically an easement here that would provide better access for residents into this lake area. There could be other opportunities for connections as well that have not been included at this point. Some of those options that we looked at was possibly some connections along through these mid blocks. It would be a connection that would help with pedestrian connectivity, but also provide a little bit of an amenity and a unique feature for a development to kind of, one, kind of break up the single-family home subdivision nature of this, but also provide, again, some of that kind of placemaking, if you will, for a subdivision, something that provides a little bit of additional of area that kind of provides that open space amenity without having to actually have a park. Another location that might warrant one would be in this location. There is a school site in the vineyards to the south. Walkability there is something that we did discuss. Given the location of the access to WW is considerably far west from this far end of the subdivision, another access there could be incorporated as well. Again, I would go back originally and say that this portion of the subdivision was submitted prior to the new UDC, so it's actually being evaluated under the old code. And the subdivision as presented now meets all requirements of the subdivision and can be approved as is. The last thing I'll touch on is that there are a requirement, or not a requirement, but staff did request a transportation study be conducted given the scale of this development. Some of the outcomes of that, specific outcomes, to the most specific outcomes was the installation of turn lanes into the site. The traffic study found that turn lanes were warranted given the trips generated into and out of the site. That's the two black arrows, so additional work will be constructed at those intersections to provide that additional lane width, to provide for those turning movements, to provide for better connectivity and basically ingress and egress out of the subdivision. On a broader sense, there were some other items during this process that staff identified that might need to be addressed through a development agreement. Some of those, again, include some of the traffic study recommendations. Those will be included in there. Some other aspects of the design of WW as far as and as including the major collector construction of Hoy Lake. Development agreement will go to council, and so I don't discuss the specifics here at this meeting, but just to let the commission know that some of those impacts, off-site impacts from this development is likely to be addressed through that development agreement, including potential intersection here with some improvements at this major collector intersection with Hoy Lake and WW. With that being said, I'd be happy to answer any questions and just reiterate, staff at this time has evaluated the preliminary plat and found that it meets all the requirements of the subdivision regulations, pre-UDC again, and we are recommending approval. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. You did a good job. This is one of our larger plans that we've seen for several years, so thank you. Commissioners, any questions for Mr. Smith? Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Smith, you indicated that to the north in that property in future development, the 10 acres had been set aside. So, but there's no plan for, so I'm concerned about lack of park or green space. Mm-hmm. And that, I know there are probably some surprises to come in the development agreement, but I'm concerned a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'll just address that real quick again. So there is a requirement for up to 10 acres be dedicated to the city for park district. So there's no development plan approved for that location as of yet. It is a planned district, so a planned development plan would need to come through, again, this body and through city council at some point in the future. So there would be an opportunity then to review the location of that park site. So that would be part of the conversation when that property develops. Again, I brought that up just to illustrate that the Parks District is aware of that requirement, and I think the property owners to the north are aware of the requirement, so it'll be something that will definitely be on the table as far as discussing when that development comes forward in the future.
I'd just like to point out the important thing is, Mr. Smith, is, you can clarify, is that the applicant is meeting their 25% green space requirements.
They're meeting the 25% preservation of climax forest.
Gotcha.
Yes.
Additional questions of Mr. Smith? I see none. We'll go ahead and open. Oh, sorry, Ms. Lowe.
Mr. Smith, I appreciate that this one does appear to have gone through CATSO review. The CATSO minutes mentioned a public hearing, but there was no acknowledgement of what the outcome of that was. Any comments on what public comments were?
I believe there was minimal public comments. I was at that public hearing. I believe Mr. Crockett was probably at that public hearing, so maybe he can refresh my memory. But I think, in general, there weren't objections to it per se that I can recall. But don't hold me to that, but we can review the minutes of that. I did not include that, and my apologies on that.
So I've just lost a little track of, is El Chaparral that now connecting up to Ballinger?
Correct. El Chaparral will be, and
we
has
go back
always
to
been.
The CATSO map.
Yeah, so El Chaparral has always been, or where it intersects WW now, the extension of that to the north has always been the location of a major collector. So this is El Chaparral here. So it was generally originally designed to go east west, but now it'll be more north south. So take the place of this one. This moves to the west. So they run more kind of parallels as opposed to intersecting.
That was going to be my next question. We appear to have lost that east-west connection through there. Are there any comments on that?
I believe that the decision there was that the internal connectivity of the subdivision will provide the necessary connectivity between those. The intersection of the major collectors was not necessarily necessary per se to still kind of provide the benefit of having those collectors running through the property through the property and then one to the west as well.
What's
but
the
I do
distance
know they,
between Richland and WW? Where that property is?
I mean,
we were just talking half mile.
It's about three quarters of a mile.
Being,
this is three quarters of a mile, so it's probably.
Okay, so it's about a mile and a half.
And the original east-west connector, Ms. Lowe, was at roughly that half-mile marker. It should be noted as well, and you can see it on this graphic, that Brooks Platte 1 does have a trailing road running off to the west. I think as the staff report read, there is a common lot that is just before you get to the end of that road segment that Hoy Lake actually ties into. So the design in the street network that is part of the Brooks Phase 1 or Platte 1, the main collector, the main artery that runs through the Brooks 1 would be extended westward. Now, it is likely that it's going to come back up into the property that's undeveloped at this point, and then the stub streets from the south are what are going to provide fingers back up into the undeveloped acreage.
excuse me.
Part of the original development agreement that went with the Richland Road track, which is what is to the north, had indicated that the collector, that the east-west street that has now been relocated and replaced by Hoy Lake was a requirement of the CATSO plan. And the idea there, again, being that we wanted to create east-west movement from Rolling Hills back down to WW to El Chaparral. That now has been at least modified along the northern property boundary and replaced, of course, by what now has been shifted further to the west as the north-south street segment coming off of El Chaparral, which would come into the Brooks on its westernmost stub. All in all, the CATSO plan does not necessarily define the corridors in an exact location. It is more from a conceptual planning perspective. So the shifting of the roadways, which occurred at the CATSO committee, assured that we still have the level of street connectivity that we needed, but just in a slightly different layout, believed to be by that committee as an appropriate exchange or transition between the two. The developability really of the remaining portion of the Richland Road track to the north of this is going to be somewhat hampered given the steep slopes and some of the other environmental constraints that it will have to now abide by due to the new UDC, since this property is unplatted, and if it is subdivided, it does need to meet full compliance. And so there will be some more significant impacts to the developability under the density class that it has on it. And the 10-acre parcel, again, for park dedication, is at the discretion of the Parks Department. There was significant discussion with this project coming in and how to allocate either the 10 acres and take a portion of it out of this project or retain it to the contractual obligation that was to the north. And the Parks Department, at the time that this project was being reviewed and they were asked for comment, determined that they were going to rely on the contractual requirements to the north to extract the 10 acres out of and potentially create more of a linear park that's part of the trail system that's utilizing the North Fork of the Grindstone. So there, I think, as Mr. Smith pointed out in his staff report as well, there are opportunities potentially for possible trail connections back to this future linear park that may be created on the 10 acres that needs to be dedicated to the north. And all of the northern street stubs that come out of the Brooks project here that we're reviewing actually are conducive to that. Design of the road network to the north will then further those overall objectives, and I think you'll have an opportunity for residents to have access to recreation, but maybe not recreation directly within their actual development itself. So there's some trade-offs here. The Parks Department has got their radar way up on this. They realize that this is an opportunity for them, and they realize with this particular project preceding development to the north where the 10 acres is required, the 10 acres will come. It will just come at the point when the northern parcel develops, and that may very well be predicated on the success of this southern parcel.
Any additional questions, commissioners of staff? I see none. I'll open up the public hearing. Anyone like to come forward to give us any relevant information on this case? Thank Please you. Come forward.
Members of the commission, Tim Crockett, Crockett 1000 West Nifong. Mr. Smith, I got it right. I wrote it down, Mr. Smith. again, Tim Crockett, Caleb Colbert, and Quinn Belmer with me here tonight representing the project. Again, a quick overview. I don't need to go through those items. We've discussed them already. Again, just a quick sketch showing the project itself. I can't remember the last time we've had this many lots and this few cul-de-sacs. So this is one thing that we've really listened to and try to eliminate as many cul-de-sacs as possible.
We appreciate that.
We've already seen these. I would like to talk about one thing with regards to developer contributions. And some of these are required due to traffic study, due to the development itself, but there are substantial outlays in capital with regard to this project that are going to benefit the community. First of all, the upgrade of Hoy Lake Drive. That's the east-west collector that comes down to the south and ties into Elk Park Drive. upsizing that, typically it's the developer's responsibility for a residential portion. In this case, he's going to build the entire project, which is about $186,000 of additional cost above what a residential street would be. Again, we're going to install a fourth leg of the signalized intersection. And this is, Ms. Lowe, this is part of the reason why CATSO looked at the realignment, was what this does is it allows that new collector street to come down and tie into a signalized intersection as opposed to being pushed further to the west and go into a location that's not signalized at this time. Furthermore, when they looked at that, the internal traffic from this development, all the residential units in this development can be handled by the internal street network and the collector streets. What this street is doing, the collector network out here, is taking additional off-site traffic through this site. Okay, so we're going to collect over time, we're going to collect a large volume of traffic that is not associated with this development. It's going to come through the development. The traffic engineers looked at that and discussed, and they said, well, if we cut it a little bit shorter and go into Elk Park Drive as opposed to El Chaparral, then we're going to have a less distance, a smaller distance of off-site traffic going through a residential neighborhood, and they thought that was better. Of course, we're going to build a pedway along WW. That's about $56,000 above what a normal sidewalk would cost. Of course, we're going to put turn lanes on WW. Now, you could say, well, this is part of your development responsibility because it is required. It is for this development. We do need turn lanes. We don't need the signalized intersection, believe it or not, but we do need the turn lanes. However, they're going to be on collector streets. One of them specifically is a major collector street that's going to benefit the whole area and not just this development. We've done calculations with regards to capacities. As when this collector gets built and this area gets built out, it's anticipated that those improvements were going to be less than about 40-45% of this area of our development will contribute to that to the need of that collector. So a substantial portion will be from other portions in the city. Something else we're going to do is we're also going to widen the shoulders along WW. This is part of the development agreement. Of course, we're not discussing the development agreement with you tonight, but just want you to know that there are additional contributions that are going to be made for this development that's not just associated with the internal portion, but also along with WW. Again, staff, they proposed the proposed permanent zone is generally inconsistent with the goals and objectives of the East Area Plan. They've also indicated that the tract is compatible with the adjacent zonings. The preliminary plat is compliant with all zoning subdivision and zoning regulations, and of course, they support it. With regards to the park, Mr. Zinner is exactly right. We did meet with the Parks Department. We asked them, are you looking for 10 acres? Are you looking at 10 acres on this piece of property or the property to the north? When the property to the north was zoned several years ago, that developer made an obligation that they would dedicate 10 acres to the city when they developed that property. So they're under that obligation. When we met with the Parks Department, we asked them what their specific location, what's your desired location for 10 acres? Is it this track? Is it the track to the north? They have plans to develop 10 acres along the creek to the north. They want a linear park that ties into their trail network that they can directly tie to and impact that area. So they have their eyes set on a piece of property specifically for that. And so we did reach out to them. We did ask them. And Mr. Zinner's correct on his comments when he stated about the park issue. So, again, with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the commission may have.
Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Commissioners, are there any questions for the speaker? Mr. McMahon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Crockett, to follow up on the park and recreation issue, this is one of the larger things we've done in a minute as far as the subdivision goes.
Yes, sir.
And by my calculations, we're looking at over 1,100 residences and probably 400-plus cars. And internal to this development, we don't have, and you just addressed that, we don't have a park or anything like that, but we do have the pedway along the south. And as Mr. Smith has mentioned, now you got me wanting to say the opposite thing. As Mr. Smith has mentioned, they had discussed with you the possibility of internal pedways that interlot between lots. Can you talk to me about that a little bit?
To be quite honest with you, we'll work with the city on that, to be quite honest. There's been no specific conversations between us and Planning Department with those. I mean, honestly, tonight's the first night that we have actually seen what they are asking for. But certainly we will discuss it with them during the design phase of the project. I mean, we want to build something that's workable for our residents, that's workable for the city. We'll discuss it at the design stage, but, I can't really comment on too much.
I really wanted to get that on the record.
Sure.
Because we're going to have a park up top, and I think it's a great place for it, and we're going to have a school to the southeast.
Right.
And you're going to have there's a lot of existing people to the southwest, so we're going to need some, besides vehicular accessibility.
We agree with that. We want our residents to be able to access to those facilities, whether it's the park or the school. That helps our, you know,
it helps everyone. I think it helps everyone. Sure. I just want to get it on the record. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Any additional questions of the speaker? Ms. Lowe.
The connector, the Hoy Lake.
Yes, ma'am.
Totally understand the coming down to Elks,
mm-hmm.
and that being the intersection. But the connection up to the north, has that road been identified also as a major collector and is being built that way?
Yes, the one's going to tie into El Chaparral.
No, the one on the northeast.
Brooks.
The Hoy Lake is going to be tying in.
Yes, it has been identified. It was identified early on as a major collector on the CATSO plan when that first phase of the development took place. So it has been designed as a major collector, and we're going to tie into that major collector for this property.
Because looking at the plan, it looks like there are some residences that may be.
There are some residential driveways. That was a negotiation between the developer and the city at the time. To acquire a few of those residents direct access to that road, but they are limited. There are none on this location.
All right, thank you.
We won the second argument, not the first.
Right. We negotiated.
Just could I follow up on that? Just to be clear, in this particular development question, there are no connections to Hoy Lake.
There are absolutely no connections. No driveway connections to Hoy Lake Drive in this. And I will also note that the road to the far left of the screen, the north-south, that is a neighborhood collector as well. So I don't think that was mentioned in staff report. And the reason for that is that helps serve the PUD 4 to the north. When our traffic study looked at this piece of property, it didn't look at just the road networks and this piece. It looked at the surrounding zonings of the property they're going to tie into it and how that this development would affect them to make sure that we don't cut a future, say, PUD-4 off from being able to have the capacity to develop to that zoning.
Yes, Mr. McMahon.
Quick follow-up, and I need to follow up with staff before I come back to Mr. Rocket. Planner Smith, you said there were approximately 30, 35 common lots on this. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. Mr. Crockett.
Yes.
We've been going through time in older, not that old, 5 or 10 year old subdivisions doing replats and such, getting rid of common lots.
Mm-hmm.
You've got 35 of them.
Absolutely.
Where are we going here?
Let me tell you the reason why. Several of them are common lots that Mr. Smith indicated. We have a large area of tree preservation and it's going to be adjacent to the amenity lot where we may put in a clubhouse, a swimming pool, or something along those lines. And we want to put that adjacent to that piece of property that can be, maybe we put a trail or something like that through there. Of course, the lake is a common lot. But the majority of those, Mr. McMahon, are common lots dedicated to stormwater quality and stormwater detention facilities. The regulations indicate that we cannot put those on private lots. We've done that before in the past inside an easement, and we prefer to put them on a private lot inside an easement, but the city does not necessarily allow us to do that. And so in order for us to be compliant, we have to put common lots around every time we have a bioretention cell or a detention facility.
It may follow up there just a little bit more. Your HOA is going to be the responsible party on this?
Absolutely. These are not – these are – and all that's covered. And when we design those, we have to sign a covenant, if you will, that we give to the city that basically says that we're responsible
for
them.
As part of the parcel development agreement.
I'm sorry?
As part of the
This is part of the design stage. Before we get any design plans approved or the final plat approved, we have to sign that and turn that over to the city. But it basically says we will maintain it. And then if we don't, it gives the city the authority to do so, but of course then they'll come back on the HOA.
Charge you. I have no more questions at this time. Thank you, Mr. Crockett. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioners, any additional questions of Mr. Crockett? I see none. Thank you, Mr. Crockett, and also thank you for disclosing the contributions being made by the applicant. It's nice to see the dollar amount tied to those. We see the items a lot of times, but we won't see the costs, so it's nice to kind of put those together, so we appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
Any additional speakers like to come forward? Please do.
Good evening. My name is Pam Pern. My address is 2003 South Alamos Place, which is El Chaparral subdivision. So I come to you tonight as a resident of the county as opposed to a city resident. It's very educational for me to get to see this in more detail and to hear the comments both from the staff report and from Crockett Engineering. Up to this point, really the information that we as a neighborhood association, a 400 home neighborhood association to the southwest of the Brooks have heard about this is pretty much what we've been able to find online. We did, however, 1 month ago, have two representatives from MoDOT and Thad Yonke, as the planner from Boone County, come out and speak with our neighborhood association, primarily about traffic concerns along WW as it affects the El Chaparral intersection there. At our request, MoDOT had done a traffic study for us at the beginning of September there, and between 6:30 a.m. and 6:30 p.m. did record 11,000 cars passing that intersection. For those of you who haven't been out that way, there are currently no traffic calming measures between the Highway 63, Keene Street, and Rolling Hills roundabout. So 45 miles an hour, got some hills, got some curves, kind of difficult to see. We've had some close calls, as the Boone County Fire Department across the corner can attest to. What we were told at that point by MoDOT was that WW falls under MoDOT's concern as a state highway, and I'm not clear how this affects that, this plan. We were also told that when we talked about CATSO and the need for some sort of traffic intervention to help things go better at the intersection of El Chaparral and WW, that while it was in the CATSO plan, there were no funds available to address that. That a roundabout would be preferable, turn lanes not preferable, based on lots of studies that they threw out, and basically that those were unfunded mandates. So 11,000 cars are coming past that intersection in a 12-hour period. That's before, of course, we complete the new school in the Vineyards. That's before we complete those three more plats that are being worked on in the Vineyards. And it's as Old Hawthorne continues to expand to the north of us on Rolling Hills. So I am very pleased to hear that it sounds like there is a plan, perhaps as part of the development proposal, I'm not clear on that, with the El Chaparral connection into the Brooks subdivision. And I found out tonight that that would be directed another way. But I want to make the city planning and zoning aware that there are some other parties perhaps that aren't at the table or who are communicating different information to the folks who that are in the surrounding area in the county, as it affects traffic, as it affects a number of things. The other thing that we've been working very closely with Kim on is the Grindstone Creek riparian corridor, and that certainly is something that has been referred to in development of the Brooks. Currently, as I'm sure you are aware, both sections of the Grindstone Creek feed into the Hinkson Creek, and so we are working, our neighborhood association is working directly with CAM to develop and triple the size of the riparian corridor along the South Fork of the Grindstone Creek as it runs south of the El Chaparral subdivision, and where there is an intention eventually, it's on city property now, to put a trail along there as well. So as we're working hard on that, we would appreciate hearing how these additional subdivisions will provide good stewardship for water quality as it feeds and through our neighborhood. So traffic, we'd love to hear more about traffic calming, addressing the increased traffic demands of WW and also the creek. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ma'am. Commissioners, are there any questions for the speaker? Yes, Ms. Kearns, maybe?
Is it Ms. Stern?
Would you?
Kern?
Would you please, Pern, would you please come back? We have some questions for you.
I was just wondering, were you aware or were you at the CATSO public hearing?
I was not aware of that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. McMahon?
A couple things. Unfunded mandates. Just information to take back your HOA, pretty much. I did some quick calculations in my head, and if your base number is 11,000, your car trips are kind of with the school and the subdivision go up to another 2,000 or 3,000, so 25-30%. That's just, don't hold me to that. I just rang that through. I would suggest that your HOA closely monitor traffic in the future to communicate to the city and to MoDOT. And as far as your riprap, your repairing goes, the council staff can correct me. The first phase of that was authorized to be paid for last council meeting, was it not? The riprap at El Chaparral?
I don't know if I can answer that.
I believe that the first phase of what you're talking about was just authorized on Monday.
Correct. What we have been doing is we have had two meetings, informational meetings, between the neighborhood and the CAM subcommittee, and we have been doing some invasive tree removal. There has not been any additions to that, but we have been working to educate our homeowners about that process, why it's important, recruiting volunteers to assist with that, and we have been assisting with some invasive removal that is down there in that floodplain along the south fork of the Grindstone Creek.
I just want to pass that information along to you because that's you're on the borderlands, though, and I just to Mr. Crockett's kudos to Mr. Crockett because they try to pay a lot of attention to he lives here, we live here. The stormwater runoff and environmental issues.
Exactly.
All right, thank you.
And it's PERN, by the way. It's spelled with a P, so it's like learn, but with a P. Thank you.
Any additional questions, commissioners? Thank you, ma'am. Anyone else in the crowd, in the audience, like to come forward? Audience in the crowd. We'll close the public hearing portion of this case. Commissioners, questions, comments, more information needed? A motion? Mr. McMahon.
Looks like my
answer. You had your pinpoint up.
In the case of 17-77, the Brooks Preliminary Plat number 2, this is the annexation part of the permanent zoning plus. I've lost my
Preliminary plat.
See, that's got so deep with the preliminary plat for 17-77. I move to approve.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. McMahon and Ms. Lowe for the seconds. Commissioners, we have a motion has been made by Mr. McMahon and this appropriate second by Ms. Lowe. Is there any discussions needed on that motion? I see none. Mrs. Burns, when you're ready.
Yes, thank you. My vote is yes. Ms. Lowe?
Yes.
Mr. Harder?
Yes.
Mr. McMahon?
Yes.
Mr. Stanton?
Yes.
Mr. Strodman?
Yes, ma'am.
Ms. Rushing?
Yes.
Mr. Toohey?
Yes.
8-0, motion carries.
Thank you, Ms. Burns. Our recommendation for approval will be forward to City Council for their consideration. At this time, is there anyone in the public that would like to come forward and give us any comments this evening? I see none. Staff. Mr. Zinner, you're always good for a few comments.
I took a meeting off, so I've had them bottled
We're
up.
Doubling up.
Next meeting is December 7th. Yeah, as they leave. I know who my supporters are. December 7th, we'll be here next meeting. We are going to give you Turkey Day off. So please enjoy that with your families and have a wonderful holiday. We do have a number of items for your December 7th agenda. A couple of these may or may not show up, two of them specifically. We have a plat for Quaker Oats. This is basically a plat that was presented in relationship to a building expansion that was proposed, and there is a provision within the code that indicates that if the expansion is less than 10% of the building area, the lot that may not have been considered legal is still allowed to be built upon. The actual square footage of expanded area for Quaker Oats is less than 10%, so we're not sure if the applicant wants to proceed forward or not. They're trying to get corporate to indicate what they would like to do. Platting the property would allow it then for any future expansions to occur without any delays, and I think that is where the issue is right now. If it does proceed forward with a platting action, it is also likely that there may be a design adjustment associated with that. But again, we're not quite sure if this will make the December 7th agenda. University Center subdivision. This is the vacant property that is to the south of Lucky's that directly fronts to Providence Road. We are looking at a final plat. Corresponding to that final plat is a series of vacation requests for unused utility easements. And there is also a series of design adjustments that are requested for that property relating from, I believe, everything from right-of-way dedication requirements to several other design standards that exist within the new UDC. We have Lenore Subdivision. This is another project that may or may not make the December 7th agenda, but we are advertising or at least proposing that it will. This is at the corner of Lenore Street and New Haven. This is the parcel is currently improved with the nursing facility, the long-term care facility for Lenore, which is actually being relocated to the Lenore campus. Behind this, that property would be being sold, roughly a 30-acre tract of land looking to be conveyed and split off. It is actually split zoned, MOF, and currently RMF. So the split zoning nature of the property does not present any problem with the platting. However, future development of the property may. The design adjustment for this particular parcel has to deal with sidewalk construction along New Haven that was not previously exempted when the Lenore facility plat was approved several years ago, and we had sidewalk waivers granted for that platting action. The piece that is actually improved with the existing nursing facility was a freestanding lot and was not included in the original Lenore master plat, and therefore that particular parcel's frontage was not waived. And then finally, we have a revised preliminary plat, I should say, off of Bluff Creek Drive. This is an area, one of the few areas that is left to develop for residential purposes that has not been previously platted. It is a revised preliminary because they have reduced the total number of lots that were originally approved on the first preliminary plat from roughly 12 to 5, if I recall correctly. However, there is a design adjustment associated with this particular property due to the fact that the total number of lots within the overall Bluff Creek development exceeded 100 under the old regulations and now well exceed the 30 under the new, and therefore we need to address the issue of the design adjustment as it relates to the total number of lots off of a single point of access. This is very close to where the Phantom Bridge was supposed to be built over the Grindstone Creek, which is no longer really an option at this point, as we understand. Therefore, this conundrum we are in with the access and the maximum number of lots, this is one of the last parcels that it may encounter, but we do have some other undeveloped tracts out here that may be up for future redevelopment as well. And then you have two public hearings. We have the NGT annexation. This is at the lowlands that are at the intersection of Vauder School. I get my roads mixed up since it changes names so many times. Vauder School at the traffic circle with Scott Boulevard. This is on the west side of Scott, down and backs up towards Mill Creek. This is a parcel of property that used to have a logging or a grinding operation sitting on it, if many of you are familiar with that, directly across from Fire Station number 16. And it is also the area where we relocated Brushwood Lake Road. So it is currently county-zoned AR. They are proposing to go to City MN, which is a mixed neighborhood, given the location at the major intersections. With the expansion, the future expansion of Vauder School into a four-lane roadway, the MN zoning classification was proposed. Has far less uses than the MC, however, may not be restricted enough when everything pans out. But we are moving that forward. There were some issues associated with this project that had to deal with the old roadbed for Brushwood Lake, which we believe are being will be resolved before the annexation request comes before the Planning Commission. And then finally, the last public hearing that we have on the agenda is for the Paris Road Plaza. This is currently a planned district property that is just to the south of the interchange of US 63 and 763 that is the home to Orschlands right now. It sits in basically the middle of the property, and either side of it is zoned planned district. The applicant has indicated that marketability of the property as a planned zone just doesn't exist due to the fact that he is being approached by tenants that are desiring to have uses that don't fit within the planned district commercial parameters, and they are more industrial in nature, and that is why they are requesting to go straight IG. This request does not include the Orchland site. So the Orchland site, which is in the center, would remain zone PD under the PD ordinance that currently applies to it. It would be the two outer flanking parcels that would be rezoned to IG. And immediately to the south of the southernmost PD property is actually undeveloped IG land today. To the north of the PD property is agricultural property that is just, it's sandwiched in between the on-ramp to 63 and the development site, agriculturally zoned. Just so you can familiarize yourself with what we're talking about and where, Quaker Oats, up obviously off of Paris Road in our industrial corridor, University Center subdivision here in the downtown area, directly south of Lucky's, your Lenore property, and this is, as you can see, the main Lenore campus, and this map is actually a little bit deceiving. The area in question for this subdivision plat is following the existing boundary line of the MN coming across to the east. All of the property then that is currently encompassed by the Lenore complex and the Lenore subdivision would remain owned by Lenore and operated under the Lutheran Senior Services. The map then, Bluff Creek Estates, as you can see, this backs up to US 63, and it is the south of the commercial development. That would be basically four developable lots with one large common lot that includes tree preservation as well as common open space that would be undeveloped. The NGT or NGT request there at the intersection of Vauder and Scott, and then our Paris Road Plaza property. As I was indicating, the two parcels flanking either side of the existing Orchlands. We will continue in your December 7th work session with our discussion of the conditional and permitted uses within the actual zoning code at this point. And as many of you realized and noted today within work session, I would like to bring up Rachel Bacon. She is our newest senior planner that has joined our staff. That name may not sound unfamiliar to those in TV land or that sit here on the dais. Rachel comes back to the city after taking about a two-year hiatus to go work in Denver, and we'll pick up where she left off with a seven-and-a-half-year term with us initially, working on our comprehensive plan, neighborhood planning activities. She will be engaged in development review, so you'll see here her at the staff table as well for some of our projects, as well as working on text changes as they relate to land use related activities. I will be sitting probably in the front row drinking coffee and relaxing now that I finally have staff, but I always am good for comments after a planning commission meeting. With that, that is all I have to offer for you this evening. I welcome Ms. Bacon aboard, and we look forward to seeing you on December 7th. Enjoy your Thanksgiving holiday.
Thank you, Mr. Zinner. Appreciate the comments. Commissioners, comments of commissioners. Mr. McMahon.
I have a motion.
You have a motion for adjournment?
I do.
Second?
Second.
Second. All of, in favor? Thumbs up? Unanimous. Have a nice evening. We're adjourned.